Hello and welcome to the KC at the Movies podcast. On today's podcast, we're going to be talking about the 98th Annual Academy Awards Final Locks. So that's the 2026 Oscars. We'll talk about Scream 7, Nirvana the Band, the Show, the Movie. And I got lost in Twin Peaks in the last 2 weeks. I'll talk about my journey with that. And we'll wrap the show up with what I'm watching, plus a special announcement towards the end of the show. So without further ado, let's get on with it. Hello and welcome to the KC at the Movies podcast. How you doing? It's quite a wonderful Tuesday night. A bit cloudy. Missed the lunar eclipse. I tried to go outside and have a look at the lunar eclipse, but the clouds covered everything and I couldn't see shit. So, yeah, no lunar eclipse for me tonight. No blood moon or whatever the fuck it was called, but it would have been cool to see. But no. As you heard up top there, we're going to be talking about the Academy Awards. We've got some movies to talk about today, a little bit of Twin Peaks. And like I said, I've got a special announcement to make towards the end. But without further delay, I need to talk about the current Oscars race for the 2026 Oscars that's occurring next week. Because I have a lot to discuss on today's podcast, we're going to move through this pretty briefly, go through the locks pretty quickly. Now, I thought I still had the paper that had all my like previous locks on, but I accidentally threw it away, so I don't actually have that anymore. I've got some fresh paper here. We're gonna go through the awards and what I'll give my final locks for those awards. We've got some definite locks, so like ones to lose, but we've still got a pretty wild Oscars race in some categories, so it's gonna be fun to talk about. Let's get right into that. So here we go, 2026 Oscars race. I want to start with the big one, BP, Best Picture. Now, I think this is still going to go to one battle after another. The current race at the moment is one battle after another. And Sinners. Sinners leading with the most nominations ever. But I still think this is going to go to one battle after another. It did get the PGA. Usually the PGA telegraphs what is going to win Best Picture, since those are awarded to the producers of the film. And it looks like one battle after another has won pretty much every precursor award for Best Picture. So I see that going to one battle after another. My pick and lock is going to be one battle after another. I also would not be sad or angry if Sinners took that. That'd be a really, really awesome win if Sinners took that as well. Best Director, that's a lock. It's going to be Paul Thomas Anderson. Finally going to get his flowers after years and years of being nominated, sometimes not even nominated. But I think that's going to go finally to Paul Thomas Anderson. He did take home the DGA. So I think that's going to go to Paul Thomas Anderson. I should probably talk about the abbreviations here. So PGA is the Producers Guild Awards and the DGA is Directors Guild Awards. These awards kind of happen. These are not televised. They happen off camera and usually happen like at least a couple of weeks or a few weeks before the actual Oscars ceremony. I think the closest one was what we had yesterday, which is the Screen Actor Guild Awards, the SAGs, which are now just called the Actor Awards. I'm not too sure what the reason is behind that, but they are now called the Actor Awards. So, yeah. So I think that's a lock for Paul Thomas Anderson. I should be writing these down. The fuck? Moving on to Best Actress, this is my first definite, this is a lock, this is hers to lose. It's going to be Jessie Buckley for Hamnet. I have yet to see the film still. I hope to check that out when I do my watch of all the Oscar movies later this week, something the Academy hasn't done for fucking years. And I think they're finally required to do it. They have to watch all the Oscar nominees. Or at least I think it's the ones that you are voting for, like the category that you are selected to vote for. You have to watch the films that are in that category now, because they're for years and years and years, These voters came out and fully admitted that they never watched these movies. They just voted because their friends were in it, or it was the popular choice. So I'm going to watch, at least try to watch all of the Oscar nominees later this week, and Hamnet is on the docket, and Jesse Buckley's performance will be seen later this week. So I think it says that she's won pretty much won every precursor so far. She's won the Golden Globe, the Critics' Choice, the BAFTA, the SAG last night as well, yesterday as well. So that's Jesse Buckley's to lose. I'd love for it to go to Rose Byrne. She was my favorite performance, but that's going to go to Jesse Buckley for sure. Now, Best Actor, here we go. We had a shake-up yesterday. Going to be, the race at the start was going to be Timothée Chalamet and Leonardo DiCaprio. Maybe a little bit of love for Wagner Moura as well. Leo is out. I think Leo is like completely out of this race now. It is now between Timothée Chalamet, Wagner Moura, and Michael B. Jordan. Because yesterday at the SAGs, Michael B. Jordan took home the top honor. Michael B. Jordan took home the top honor. He got the, I keep saying it's the actor award, but I'm gonna keep calling it the SAG. He took home the SAG for Best Actor. Huge shakeup. I didn't expect it at all. Well done. Good on him. Not my favorite in the category. I still think it's a great performance, one of his best. But my personal pick is Timothée Chalamet for Mighty Supreme. I think I'm going to stick by my guns here and go Timothée Chalamet for Best Actor. But it is a three-way race now. This is between Timothée Chalamet, Michael B. Jordan, and Wagner Moura. This is a three-way race. So it could go to anyone. It really could go to anyone. It's really exciting. I kind of love it because last year, I think for the last few years, actually, we've just known who's going to win Best Actor, like Adrian Brody, bang, like that was last year. But this time around, it's a pretty wild race. It's a pretty, open field kind of thing. And I think I'd be, I haven't seen The Secret Agent yet. That's another film I intend to get to at the end of this week and check out his performance, as well as the film itself. Michael B. Jordan shook it up yesterday, really shook it up. So he has entered the race. His horse has entered the race. So he has entered the race and it's gotten very, very interesting. But that being said, my pick in lock is still, Timothée Chalamet. I think it's his time. I think it's his time to shine. Moving on to Best Supporting Actress. This is another one that's going to be pretty much up in the air as well. A pretty wild one. Usually these supporting categories, and we'll talk about supporting actor in a second, but usually these supporting categories are pretty wrapped up. They're always locks. We always, like, that is pretty much always locked up because that person is always winning all the precursors. But I think supporting actress is still up in the air because Wunmi Mosaku won the BAFTA recently. And then Amy Madigan shook up the game, came in, took the game, shook it up like a milkshake, and won the SAG for Best Supporting Actress yesterday. So now, it's really anyone's game in Supporting Actress. I still think the love is for Tiana Taylor in One Battle After Another, but Madigan has won the Critics' Choice Award, the SAG, and I believe the Astra as well, yes. And then all of these critics groups awards, which I'm not going to name, but there's a whole list of them here. And she's got winner, 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 winner. And Mosaku won the BAFTA, like I said. She won the BAFTA. She took on the BAFTA. And then Tiana Taylor only got the Golden Globe. I just think there's going to be kind of like a surprise, but also not really a surprise. And I still think it's going to be Tiana Taylor for One Battle After Another. But the race, I think, is still between Taylor and Mosaku. I think this is your current race now for, I think your current race now for supporting actress is Mosaku, Taylor, and Madigan. And because Madigan comes in, and like I said, shakes the fucking game. I think I'm going to lay down still Tiana Taylor, but I think Madigan might be a dark horse here. So it's going to be really exciting. I really can't wait to see what happens here. But my pick is going to be Tiana Taylor for... my pick and lock is going to be Tiana Taylor for One Battle After Another. Moving on to supporting actor now. I think this is now a lock. This is, seems to be always a lock every year, but I think this is really, this is now a lock now. Sean Penn, I think, is taking home this award. He won the BAFTA. He just won the SAG yesterday as well. He was not present at any of the ceremonies. Many people do not like this man, I think for fucking good reason as well. But I believe this will be his third Oscar win if he gets this. I could be wrong there. Someone fact check me on that if they want to. But his real competition was Stellan Skarsgård, and he won the Golden Globe. But that's about it. That's really about it. I think this is going to Sean Penn for sure. So that's a lock for me, is Sean Penn for supporting actor. Moving on to best adapted screenplay. And I think the lock here is One Battle After Another. I don't really see this going to Hamnet. I think people are talking about this might be going to Hamnet. I think this is going to One Battle After Another. So my lock would be for best adapted would be One Battle After Another. And then I think original, they're going to give that to Sinners. I think that's going to go Sinners' way. My pick actually would probably be Mighty Supreme, because Sinners, if it doesn't win Best Picture, it's definitely not winning Best Director. So it does. If it doesn't win Best Picture, they'll at least award it with original screenplay. I hate saying at least because it does deserve a lot of these awards, but usually when, based on, you know, previous Oscars experience, if you're not winning the Best Picture, you're at least going to take home screenplay. Sinners coming in there for a win. Now, moving on to casting, Sinners did take home Ensemble last night. I still think this could go either way. This is another open one, because Ensemble is the actors, but casting is the person that casted the actors and the people in the film. So this would, you know, ideally this would go to the casting director, maybe the director as well, but this would most likely go to the casting director. And I think this should go to Mighty Supreme. I have now, you know, seen Mighty Supreme, and I think the casting in that movie is phenomenal. Some great choices made by Safdie and his team. Some great surprising choices made by Safdie and his team. So I'm going to stick by my guns here and go Mighty Supreme for casting. But this could go to Sinners. I could see this going to Sinners. I wouldn't be mad about it, but my actual, you know, when you think about the casting itself, I think the more interesting choice, the more exciting choice is Mighty Supreme for casting. Cinematography, this is another one that I'm not too sure about either, because has the ASC, have they voted? Sorry, that's the American Society of Cinematographers. Sorry, I need to start a lengthening these abbreviations. So this is between One Battle After Another and, or this could be actually Train Dreams too, actually. I'm going to go Sinners for this one, because they're going to go for that IMAX thing. So that's my guess anyway. My guess is they're going to go for the IMAX thing. So my lock for cinematography is Sinners. Okay. Costume design, that's probably going to go to Frankenstein. I'm seeing all the winners here. It did win the CDG, which is the Costume Designers Guild. And I think that's going to go to Frankenstein. I'm going to go Frankenstein for that one. So I think Frankenstein's taking home technical awards. And then moving on to production design, I believe is next. Now, film editing. Oh boy. This is a tough one as well. Fuck. I like both the cuts of Sinners. One Battle After Another. And well, I do like the cut of Sinners too. But I really like the cuts of One Battle After Another and Mighty Supreme. I think they feel shorter than they are. I would give, I think, the leg up to One Battle After Another. I think it does a little bit better than its pacing, with its pacing, than Mighty Supreme. I mean, I'd give it to No Other Choice, you know me. But it looks like it's going to a lot of, F1 is one of a lot of these precursors. But that's the thing, like, that's why I think F1 is getting the most attention, because with the Oscars, they always choose the film with the most editing, not the best editing, in my opinion, and I think a lot of people's actually opinion as well. But They always seem to go the film with the most editing. See, example, Bohemian Rhapsody winning in 2019. They could go F1 because F1 does have a lot of the most editing. Mighty Supreme also has some great transitions as well, like really exciting editing choices. I'm gonna go Oba for best editing. I think makeup and hairstyle, that's just gonna go to Frankenstein. We're not even gonna talk about that. And then production design's also going to Frankenstein as well. That's going to Frankenstein 2. Score is going to Sinners because I believe Goranson has won every single precursor. Just about. BAFTA, Critics' Choice, Golden Globe, Hollywood Music and Media, Society of Composers and Lyricists, Astra. Yeah. It's pretty much won every single award. My pick would be One by Lust for Another, which I did talk about in the previous podcast, but I think this is definitely going to go to Sinners, so that's... It's no competition there. I love Johnny Greenwood's score from Oba, but I also do love Granson's score for Sinners. I listened to that, I think, for weeks on end, and that actually helped me get my feature film written. So, shout out Granson, Ludwig Granson, and his score for Sinners. Keeping in the music category, we're going to go with Best Original Song next, and that is definitely going to be Golden. There's nothing going to beat that. That's Golden for sure. Best Sound, they're going to give that to F1 for sure. I've had my grievances about the sound categories been consolidated like this, but putting those grievances aside, this is going to F1 for sure. People are shooting for Surratt. I still haven't seen Surratt yet. It's another movie I hope to get around to. I like, based on this precursors, based on the talk at the moment, based on the film itself and its sound design and how loud it is, it's F1. It's F1 for sure. And then I think this is the last one, visual effects. Visual effects, we're not even going to talk about it. It's Avatar. That's Avatar. That's a lock for that. Animated feature. Well, that's another lock. It's fucking K-pop Demon Hunters. So I think its only real competition at the moment is Arco. Really excited to check out Arco later this week. I'm excited to do that. Yeah, I don't see Zootopia 2 getting in the way of that. Another movie I'm really excited to watch as well is Little Amelie and the Character of Rain, which they have spelt wrong here on the Gold Derby website. Little Amelia, they've called it. Or is that, would that be the English word for Amelie? I'm not too sure. Maybe I'm being the cockhead here, but I'm excited to check that out. It's looks like a very, very beautiful, interesting, heartbreaking, possibly film, but beautiful nonetheless. And documentary feature, it's going to The Best Neighbor. Jesus Christ, The Perfect Neighbor. It's going to The Perfect Neighbor. I'm still going to check out The Alabama Solution and fucking what's it called? Not Cover Up, Cutting Through Rocks. I think I was trying to find that one and then I couldn't find it. And then Mr. Nobody Against Putin, I couldn't find that one either. So the one I have seen, which is really, really fucking good, is The Perfect Neighbor. I don't do the shorts because I never get around to the documentary shorts and the live action shorts. So I don't do the shorts, as we know. And we will finish with International Feature. And I think this race is between Secret Agent and Sentimental Value. Secret Agent has some love. Brazil could go for a second consecutive win here. But I'm pretty sure Sentimental Value has won all the precursors so far. Oh, yeah. Look at that. Look at that list. Oh, my God. Oh, Secret Agent won the Golden Globe. You know, these bodies don't cross over. It won the Critics' Choice as well. Interesting. It's between these two for sure. I think like Brazil could go for that second consecutive win. In my heart of hearts, in my what I believe will take it, because I don't think Joachim Trier won for Worst Person in the World. I'm not sure if he did. I don't think he did. I don't think Worst Person in the World did win. I think I'm thinking of Triangle Sadness. I'm thinking of the other is Ruben Olsen's Norwegian, right? Swedish, my bad. Swedish. Yeah, I'm going to go Sentimental Value. My lock would be Sentimental Value for International Feature. If it is nominated in Best Picture, it's at least getting a National Feature. But that's the thing. Secret Agent is also nominated for Best Picture, and it's racing in International Feature. Like I said, it's an open race. It could go either way. It's the boxing match between these two, and I think the winner will be Sentimental Value. And that's it. Those are your Oscars final locks. Going through it again, I've got one battle loss for another for Best Picture. I've got Paul Thomas Anderson for Best Director. I've got Timothy Chalamet for Best Actor. I've got Jesse Buckley for Best Actress. I've got Tiana Taylor for Supporting Actress. I've got Sean Penn for Supporting Actor. I've got one battle loss for another for Best Adapted Screenplay. I've got Sinners for Best Original Screenplay. I've got Marty Supreme for Best Casting. I've got Sinners for Best Cinematography. I've got Frankenstein for Best Costume. I've got one battle loss for another for Best Editing. I've got Frankenstein for Best Makeup. Frankenstein for Best Production Design. I've got Sinners for Best Score. I've got Golden from K-Pop Demon Hunters for Best Song. I've got F1 for Sound. I've got Avatar for Best Visual Effects. Best Animated Feature, I've got K-Pop Demon Hunters. Best Documentary, I've got The Perfect Neighbor. And finally, Best International Feature, I've locked in Sentimental Value for that one. I'm excited to see what happens at the Academy Awards. We've had most of the precursor awards happen. I think we're still going to have the WGAs. And then the Oscars are on next week. So I will be talking about all the posts talk about the Oscars then. For now, those are the locks. Let's get excited. The race begins. Well, the race is nearly finished, but it continues, I guess. It gets exciting. So let's move on to the movies I want to talk about this week. The first movie I really don't really want to talk about because I think it's a waste of my breath, but I will talk about it anyway. I mentioned it up top. I watched Scream 7 last week. And based on my... Based on my voice, my tone of voice, based on what I am feeling, I think you can tell based on my tone of voice that I did not like this film. I thought this was absolute garbage. There are some small moments I do like about it. I think the opening is pretty good. But everything else, wow, what a mess. It sucks. That's the best thing I can say. I was worried about this film when Melissa Barrera was fired. I believe that was in, was that 22? Was that 22 or 23? I think it was 23. Or was it 24? My God, how long has it been? Anyway, Melissa Barrera was fired. She was like the main fucking character of the new trilogy that they were planning. And so it was Jenna Ortega. But Jenna Ortega left for scheduling issues. I'm putting that in quotation marks since this is not a video podcast. But I am putting that in quotation marks because I don't believe that's the case. She may say that is. Her publicist may say that is. But I believe that is because Melissa Barrera was fired and she followed suit and didn't want to be part of the film as well. Radio Silence also didn't want to do the film either. They dropped out after 6 to do Abigail. So they hired a new director, Christopher Landon. And then because of the shit that went down with Melissa Barrera and Skydance, Landon fucking jumped ship. And then they bring in Kevin Williamson, who is the original writer of the first three Scream movies. Or no, I think it's 1, 2, and 4. I think it's 1, 2, and 4. And then they bring him in the director's chair. He has only directed one film. I thought he directed Sick from about 3 years ago. 2022. But that was John Hyams. I was wrong about that. I thought he had directed that film. He wrote that film, but that was actually John Hyams. So sorry, John. he's only directed one movie, and that was, I believe it's like Believing Mrs. Tingle or something. I'm sure I'm getting that name wrong, but it's a movie from ages and ages and ages ago. So there's not really any evidence that Williamson can be a good director. And having seen the film now, that is definitely the case. He is not a good director. He's not a very visually interesting director. He plays it very safe with his shot style and the way his vision for the film. Yeah, this movie is just, it's an absolute mess. It's so bad in a lot of aspects. I am incredibly disappointed as a Scream fan. I am incredibly let down as a Scream fan. Now, granted, I didn't go into this film expecting a lot, to be honest, because of based on what was happening around everything. I kind of just wanted this film to be cancelled, to be honest. But they brought on, they brought back Neve Campbell. That check must have been massive for her to come back because she wasn't part of Scream 6. But they brought back Neve Campbell and they decided to put in her daughter, who's played by this new actress who I'm not going to get the name for now because I don't really want to talk about this movie for that long. They have her play her daughter named Tatum. And I can't even get to the reasons why I hate that. It's just, I think this film is a soulless cash grab, and I never thought I would say that about a Scream film. But I really think this is a soulless cash grab. I saw this with two friends of mine, and the experience is only elevated from the company with those friends. Shout out Sophie and Ellie. Other than that, I would have been just mad for the rest of this night. I was lucky to be able to bounce off to my mates about how I felt about the film, but I think I just would have been mad for the rest of my night if I saw this alone. But like I said, I was kind of going into the movie, I never go into movies going to hate it. I wanted to have a little bit of, you know, give this film a little bit of grace, but also it's just based on everything that was happening around it, I had pretty much very low expectations. And because I had the low expectations, I wasn't severely disappointed. I'm only saying disappointed because I'm a long time huge Scream fan. That's the only reason why I'm feeling that immense disappointment, is because of being a fan of these movies and even really liking what they were doing with 5 and 6 with the Carpenter sisters. That's gone. Chad and Mindy from the Core 4, they're in this film. Jasmine Savoy Brown and Mason Gooding, they have nothing to fucking do in this movie. The same shit happens to them that happens in 6. They are completely superfluous to the film. They should not be in it, but they're in it anyway. I'm glad they got their paychecks. Courtney Cox is back as Gail Weathers, of course, but they again do not know what to do with her fucking character. She had like a partner in 6, and she was like she's gone through so many fucking jobs at this point. But in this one, she's a talk show host. She was like a news anchor, I think, in 5. And then she's like now a talk show host. She like disappears for like half the film. She's in the movie for like the first half, and then she's gone for like the rest of it. And it focuses on Sydney and her daughter. And God bless Neve, she's doing a great job here. But holy fuck, she cannot lift this material. This just fucking absolute shitty material that this movie has to work with. One of the things I did like about this film is the opening scene. I do think they just get all these opening scenes right. It's not better than 6's. I love 6's opening scene. But this one was pretty playful, pretty fun. A play on an Airbnb kind of thing. So I enjoyed that. And then the actual film itself, no, it's just awful. It's absolutely god-awful. This is the worst film in the franchise now, I think. And I am actively telling people not to go see it and to go see something so much more deserving of your time, like our next movie we're going to talk about after this. But I'm not going to talk any more about it. It's not good. I had a really bad time of it. It's completely uninspired was the word I came away with, I think, watching it. Uninspired. Very uninspired for a Scream film. I think this film is a shameless, soulless cash grab with heavy fucking gratuitous nostalgia bait, empty nostalgia bait that is a complete waste of your time and money, and that you should not see it. And that's it. I'm not talking any more about this movie, so we're moving on. We're going to talk about a much, much better film and something that I really think you should see, and that is Nirvana the band, the show, the movie. I don't know where you begin here, but because this is a quite the time, there might be a spoiler section. There might not be. I'm not too sure. Maybe not, because I do have a lot more to talk about. So I'll briefly talk about Nirvana the band, but there is so much to love in this movie. Just a bit of context before I get into everything. I'm a fan of Matt Johnson. I do like his stuff. I loved Blackberry from a few years ago. I've seen parts of Operation Avalanche. I don't know why I've seen parts and not the whole film, but I've seen parts of it, not like clips on YouTube. I believe I started it once and I something came up and I had to like stop watching it, and I just never got back to it. But I've been meaning to, especially after watching Blackberry, I wanted to go back and watch Matt Johnson's filmography, but again, just life got in the way. So I did watch a few episodes of the show before I watched the movie, and I absolutely loved those episodes. I believe that was just the TV show. That was from season two, I believe. And there's one episode from season one I watched. Haven't got around to watching the web series yet. But after watching this film, I'm getting it all done. I'm watching it all. And I'm really excited that Neon, because you couldn't actually find the web series or the TV show anywhere to watch. But because Neon acquired this film last year, they're now doing a deal, I believe, with Matt Johnson of putting all of the stuff on physical release, and they're going to do like extra content, I believe, for it as well. So excited for that. The film was a bit of a mouthful. Yes, it's Nirvana the Band, the show, the movie. It stars Matt Johnson and Jamie Carroll. And where'd you start here? It's about two guys. They're called Nirvana the Band. And every premise of the TV show is they try to get a show at this place called the Rivoli in Toronto, Canada. And every episode involves like a sort of scheme or a sort of plan to get a show at the Rivoli, usually orchestrated by Matt. And Jay is kind of just along for the ride, but he also loves getting up to these hijinks as well. This is done with real people as well. A lot of these scenes are filmed out in public, and they kind of construct the narrative around these real life interactions with people. And that's a lot of the show, and that is a lot of the movie as well. But because they're so well known, things started to get a lot more scripted, I believe, in the later seasons. And of course, this movie is pretty scripted as well. But a lot of this movie is improvised, as told by Matt Johnson in some interviews that I've been watching recently. And a lot of it is improvised. Just the core kind of idea about the story and the narrative structure is present, but everything in between is off the cuff, improvised, ad-libbed, and just kind of like thrown together. And I say thrown together, it's not to disparage the filmmaking at all, but they went naturally with what occurred, I'll say that. So basically this film is about them. They want to get a show at the Rivoli. The movie begins with Matt going through a plan about how they're going to, I think, skydive off the CN Tower, which is a really tall tower in Toronto, and into the Sky Dome, the Canada Sky Dome. By skydiving into the dome, people will be looking at them, and then they say we're playing a show at the Rivoli, and then that people will come to the Rivoli. This goes like horribly wrong. And without spoiling anything, this turns into a sci-fi road trip movie. And I think that's where I'm going to leave it, because actually I'm not going to get into spoilers, because I think you need to see this movie to really appreciate what's going on with it. I was very lucky to go to the screenings that they had, not last weekend, the weekend before, when they were just doing the screenings in certain cinemas around Australia. And the local cinema near me was doing a screening on both. It was Friday night and Saturday night. And I was very lucky enough to go to the sold out Saturday night showing with a friend of mine. He hadn't seen any of the show. I had seen, like I said, a little bit of the show. And we both had like the best time watching this fucking movie. It is one of the funniest movies I think I've seen in a long time. I'm not going to go super hyperbolic with it, and I'm not going to overhype it, because people are acting like this is like the second coming of Christ, but it's not. It's I'm going to taper expectations there. It's not, but it is a really, really funny movie that is really up your alley if you like really stupid jokes, really crazy premises, fucking knockout silly ass lines, but are really like funny in the moment and then make a lot of sense later. A lot of like playful filmmaking techniques. The editing is amazing, and it's a tight 90, man. It's a tight fucking 90, and that is what it's a comedy that's a tight 90. It's fucking rare nowadays to get a comedy that's a tight 90. There is, like I said, it turns into a sci-fi road trip movie. And let me tell you, that's something I did know a little bit of the premise before I went in. But other than that, completely blind, and I had the fucking best time watching this movie. Unfortunately, I did watch Scream 7 afterwards, so that kind of soured the movie taste, because I was like, watching movies in February, I was like, oh damn, I'm having a really good movie month. And then fucking Scream 7 came around. But this is incredible. This is an incredible movie. I can't wait to watch this again. I really wanted to go to the encore screenings that happened on the last weekend, but then I ended up having plans with friends. So I will be looking out for the digital. I'll of course be looking out for the physical release, the Blu-ray, the 4K, whatever Johnson wants to put out, whatever Neon wants to put out. Man, you just have to watch this movie. You really just have to watch this movie. When this movie comes out somewhere where you can finally watch it, just give your time to this movie. Do not give it to the movie I'd mentioned previously. Give your eyes the feast that is this movie. And I cannot fucking wait to watch this again. I think I gave it like a hard on Letterboxd, but this might go up to a 5, especially after watching interviews of Matt Johnson and Jamie Carroll and seeing what went into this movie, because there are so many times as well where you're watching it and you're like, how the fuck did they do this? How do they get away with this? And again, you'll see when you watch the film, but I found myself so many times going like, there's no fucking way. There's no way they got to do this. And, you know, with movie making magic and, you know, tricks and techniques, they were able to do it. And also some more of asking for forgiveness instead of permission. There's one particular bit which had me in absolute stitches. It's usually a part that I kind of predict in movies, like if they're getting like built up to, but this one just completely shocked me. And the whole theater actually like was just electric at this moment. And I can't wait to see this, like that moment again. That's, I really wanted to go back to like an encore screening, wait for that moment and just look at the crowd to see their reaction to that particular moment. It kind of reminded me when I watched Deadpool for the first time, when I saw that in cinemas for the first time, and just how shocking that all was on that first watch. But unlike my experience of Deadpool now, especially, you know, what my experience with it is now, the stuff I see in this movie, I think, will be a lot more substantial and a lot more fruitful, I guess, on a rewatch, especially knowing what happened with these, with how they shot these fucking scenes, man. Because you just will not believe it. When you're watching it, you just will not believe what's happening. Like, you're like, there's no fucking way. There's no way. And they did. And the stuff, I haven't even mentioned the stuff they have done with old footage as well. And the narrative choice they make with that old footage, brilliant. Just fucking brilliant. Like, absolutely brilliant. I do see myself bumping this up to 5 stars, I think, in a rewatch, because this is a special, special movie. A special movie. And, I mean, ever since watching it, I haven't stopped thinking about it. I've been wanting to watch it again. Like, it's one of those movies where you watch it and you're like, that was really fucking funny. But I've watched it now and that's it. But then I find my brain returning to it and going like, no, I want to watch that again. I've got to watch that again. I've got to turn my ass around and watch that again. But unfortunately, I'll have to wait for the digital release, but I will be bated breath. I will be waiting with bated breath for that digital release and, of course, that physical release as well as the show. And like I said, I'm now watching the show and the web series now as well. So I need more Nirvana the Band the Show content. I need it all. Yeah, if you've got to watch one film this year... watch Nirvana the Band the Show, the movie, please, and check it out. I think it is my movie of the year so far, and that is including Marty Supreme. But I'm going to be a little bit of a cheeky little bitch here and put Marty Supreme back in 2025, because that technically did come out in 2025. Yes, it did come out January 22nd in Australia, but it came out Christmas Day globally everywhere else at least, and that is technically a 2025 movie. It got its theatrical release in 2025. Nirvana the Band the Show the Movie got its theatrical release. It did play at festivals in 2025, but it got its theatrical release in February 2026. So that is my movie of the year so far. So please do check it out when you get the chance. Nirvana the Band the Show the Movie. God damn, what a time. Now, I did briefly mention at the top, I was a little bit of a tease. I was a little bit of a cheeky little boy. And I did say, I've been watching Twin Peaks. And that's what I've been doing the last, I think, two weeks now. My mate, he booked a showing of Fire Walk With Me, the film, the prequel film to the series that Lynch directed himself, David Lynch directed himself. He was like, are you going to be able to watch the series before we watch the film? And I was like, oh yeah, absolutely. Like, this is like, I think we did this in January. And I was like, oh yeah, February 24th. I'll be able to do that for sure. And then I didn't. And then it was like a week before the film. And I was like, holy fuck, I've got to watch 30 episodes of Twin Peaks in 1 week. Which I did. Credit to myself, I did do it. I ended up doing it. I finished it the night before we went to see it in the theater. So yes, I watched 30 episodes of Twin Peaks, seasons 1 and 2. I have not watched The Return yet, because technically Return takes place 25 years later, which I didn't want to watch. I wanted to watch Fire Walk With Me after the show, because technically that is the watch order you should do in. Even though it's not the chronological order, that is the release order. So that is how I'm watching the show. So yes, I did watch the first two seasons. I really, really, really enjoyed it. If you're not familiar with Twin Peaks, it is a show created by David Lynch and Mark Frost, starring this whole cast of characters. Basically, this woman turns up dead, Laura Palmer. She's the prom queen of the town. She's a very popular girl. And it is basically a murder mystery, finding who killed Laura Palmer. That's basically your question that lies over the whole show. Who killed Laura Palmer? But in between all that, we get all these different sub-stories. We get to meet all these characters. It's a little bit of a soap opera because you spend a lot of time in this town. And Dale Cooper, Agent Dale Cooper, portrayed by Kyle MacLachlan, is just having a grand old time in Twin Peaks. And yes, he's trying to solve the murder, but he's also really getting to know all of the residents of Twin Peaks and becoming like quite fond of them and wanting to stay there. And that's, I'm not going to get into spoilers or talk about anything, because that could be a whole other podcast. There's a fucking lot to unpack with this show. But I really, really enjoyed season one. I thought season one was like pretty much perfect. Absolutely loved the first 9 episodes of season two. But once those episodes are resolved, episodes 10 to 19, I thought were a bit of a drag. I think on a rewatch, they might be better because now I've seen everything. But there is just a lot of like unnecessary subplots in those episodes. There was a lot of like theories flying around that was because Frost and Lynch were not involved that much. Some people say that Lynch was leaving. I think he left to do Wild at Heart or something. Or he left for Italy. Again, there's so many theories that are happening. Frost went on to do work on his solo film, Storyville. But, and then other people are saying that Lynch was heavily involved with those episodes 10 to 19. And then, of course, the rest of the show as well. I there's so many theories going around, so I don't really want to subscribe to any of them. I'm just going off what I saw, what I watched, and judging what I watched basically, you know, on its own. And I just did not enjoy episodes 10 to 19. I enjoyed the subplot. I did really enjoy was the Benjamin Horn one. I'm not going to spoil it, but the Benjamin Horn one, I thought that was my favorite. The other ones involving, let's say, I'm just going to say it, Nadine's sub-story. I keep saying sub-story like it's a fucking Yakuza game. Subplot. Every time that story was on screen, I did not care. And then in James's one, I didn't care either. I just wanted to skip the scene, really. I wanted to watch it at 1.5 speed, but I just can't bring myself to do that. So I just had to, as we say in Australia, cop it. So yeah, 10 to 19. I don't think you should skip them, but I just did not have such a good time. I thought it was just a complete fall off of the show. And then 20 to 22 are incredible. Especially the finale. The finale is incredible. But 2022, it just fucking locks the fuck back in again. And then you're back. You're in it. And shit happens. And shit gets weird. And it just has this finale that just blew me away. And at the same time, left me with so many questions. So I had a really great time with Twin Peaks. It felt like a fever dream because I did watch all of these episodes in a week. And it really just felt like a fever dream. Like, I'd have to go to work. I had to go to, like, social stuff. Sometimes I'd even go to social stuff. And then I would come home and watch Twin Peaks. And that was, like, my day for a whole week. Those are my days for a whole week. So it felt like a fever dream. Because then I went straight from that to watching Twin Peaks Fire Walk With Me the next day at my local cinema. And then that itself was an even bigger fever dream, because that movie, holy shit, incredible movie, like absolutely incredible movie. I fucking adored Fire Walk With Me. I think I gave an immediate 5 stars on Letterboxd. I adored it. Absolutely adored it. I loved what was done of it. I loved how it set itself apart from the TV show and was just something completely different, but also very reminiscent of the best parts of the series. Cheryl Lee, I think, gives one of my favorite performances ever. Like, it's such a singular, unique performance. And I've just never seen anything like that done in a way. It's like campy, but also really heartbreaking and emotional. And then it's really like, I'm trying to figure the practitioners that I learned about in high school when I was doing drama. It's not Brecht, it's... Who would it be? Not Stanislavski. Oh, fuck, I can't think at the moment. But just like that reminded me of that kind of acting. That really, like, it's like an overacting, also very subtle and very, like, powerful performance. Quietly powerful, quietly heartbreaking, just tragic. It's incredible. An incredible performance. Cheryl Lee fucking killed it. And so if you don't know, Fire Walk With Me is a prequel to the show. It's about Laura Palmer. It's about her last week before, I think it's her last week before she was murdered. She becomes that murdered girl and becomes like the plot of the show. And it's just like a completely different beast, but also, like I said, very reminiscent of the best parts of the show. And in the theater we watched it in, I felt like I was in the fucking Black Lodge, because there's like red curtains in the theater that I watched it in. Red curtains, like really big screen, red curtains, and then the pattern looks fucking identical to what is in the Black Lodge and what is in the Red Room in... I guess in the dreamscape or in the other world, I guess. Well, it's the Black Lodge, so it's the other world. And if you've seen Twin Peaks, if you watch Twin Peaks, you know what I'm talking about there. But it felt fucking surreal. Like the movie, we had this experience and the movie ends and then it just felt fucking surreal being in that room with the red curtains and then that floor pattern. It felt surreal. It felt absolutely surreal. It felt like a dream. It felt like I had this almost like 4D experience with this movie. Like the way I can describe it is exactly how the series feels. And that is a surreal experience. And that was my journey with Twin Peaks. That was my journey with Fire Walk With Me. It's an experience I'll never forget. This is a film I'll never forget. Might even reach my pantheon of top 10 if I keep, you know, if I continue to watch it. But right now I'm happy to have a step back. I'm going to watch more Lynch films before I get into the return, because I've heard from some people in the online space that it would be good to watch his filmography before getting into The Return, which is another 18 episodes, I believe, from 2017. It takes place 25 years later, like I said. So I think I'll do that. I think I'll watch his filmography first, and then the rest of what I've got to watch first, and then check out The Return, and then my Twin Peaks journey will be complete. But man, what a fucking ride it's been. What a journey it's been. Incredibly rewarding, incredibly surreal, like I said, and it's unlike anything I've ever undertaken, I think. I've had such a special experience with this show and film, and this world that Lynch and Frost have created. It makes me miss David Lynch even more. I know Frost is responsible for the world as well, as is David Angles as well. I believe that David Angles is his name. But then you watch Fire Walk With Me, you come out of that, and you just miss him. You just miss him after that, because he looks like there's nothing. I haven't seen anything like this. This is in the 90s. I've just never seen anything like this film. Very singular vision. And I'm starting to get choked out talking about it. But it's one of the saddest horror films I think I've ever seen. Is Twin Peaks Fire Walk With Me. One of the saddest, most tragic horror films I think I've ever seen. And it left an incredibly huge impact on me and affected me quite heavily. So yeah, if you do want to find yourself in the town of Twin Peaks, Washington, do yourself a favor. Check in to the Great Northern and get to know the residents of Twin Peaks, because it's quite the experience. Okay. Wow. I'm just trying to collect myself again after that. We'll have a drink of water quickly as well. Okay. Let's wrap up with what I've been watching recently. Like I said, Twin Peaks was one of them. I checked out the film Before the Devil Knows You're Dead, which is a film directed by Sidney Lumet. Of all people, you know, the guy that made 12 Angry Men. But this film, I believe, is from 2008, I think. It stars Philip Seymour Hoffman, Ethan Hawke, Marissa Tomei. And it's about these two brothers that plan to rob this mom and pop... mom and pop kind of small town jewelry store. And then it's basically follows the events, I think, leading up to it, and then the events afterwards as well. And I think this is like one of the most bleakest films I've seen in recent memory. Heartbreaking cinema. Like I watched this like earlier in February, but, just very bleak. Very, very bleak movie. Philip Seymour Hoffman and Ethan Hawke, I think, give great performances. Philip Seymour Hoffman, I think, being the standout. There is a scene in the film where Philip Seymour Hoffman is like dismantling a room. And that, to me, is one of the most quietly powerful scenes I think I've seen of someone getting mad at the environment around them, or... you know, like I said, taking it apart, dismantling. We've seen a lot of scenes about characters getting up, getting crazy and getting angry and taking apart a room, you know, destroying a room. But I've never seen it done like this. It's a very quiet anger. It's like it's a perfect example of the showing and not telling rule. And just by watching that scene, you can tell everything that's happening with Philip Seymour Hoffman's character. And what he is currently going through and experience the feelings that he's experiencing. And if I have to vouch for one scene alone in that film, it is that scene right there when he does that to that room. I thought it was a very fascinating movie, especially to see like what happens before this bank heist, this jewelry store heist, and what happens after this jewelry store heist, and how we see the fallout and the fallout that we see with these characters, and especially the consequences that we see with these characters. One of the more interesting movies I did watch in February, And if you haven't checked it out, it's Before the Devil Knows You're Dead. Yeah, underwatched, I think. Not really talked about that much. But yeah, do check it out. Before I subjected myself to Scream 7, I did check out the 30th anniversary of the first Scream movie, one of my favorite movies of all time, as well as being my favorite scary movie. And incredible. Great crowd. Went with my sister, who I've also gotten into Scream in the last few years. And really, really great crowd. It was so good to see another one of my favorite movies up on the big screen. And I hope I really continue doing this trend this year, where I do get to see a lot of my favorites up on that big screen, because recently I've been kind of knocking them out, and I'm really, really happy about that. So, you know, Seven, Drive, Jaws, I mean, I've done Jaws actually three times. But Seven, Drive, Scott Pilgrim versus the World. Yeah. There's definitely more, but Synecdoche in New York, there you go. I'd love to see it on the big screen. Holy shit, Synecdoche in New York on the big screen, man, that would be crazy to watch for like my 30th birthday. My god, I think I might still do that. I think I might just still watch that film anyway when I turn 30. Anyway, fucking tangent. So yeah, Scream 30th anniversary, really, really exciting, loved it, great crowd as well. Just saw it at this small town, small cinema in near where I live. And we had a great night. Really, really great night. That opening scene is still, like, really scary. And just so fucking good. So good. I noticed all the little, like, filmmaking tricks that Craven was using back then. And especially in that scene with Casey Becker. And I was just so elated and excited. It was so exciting to watch, and just seeing all the vision that Craven had with this film, and Williamson, to give him the credit as well of writing it. Yeah, a special, special movie, Scream. It's one of the best, and it was really cool to see up there. I also checked out Blue Moon as well, which is the movie that Ethan Hawke is nominated for Best Actor at the Academy Awards, and I think is also the original screenplay, I believe, is the other award it's got, from Richard Linklater, who is one of my favorite filmmakers. This is about Lorenz Hart, who is a famous Broadway composer, I believe, and he had a partner who is played by Andrew Scott in this film. And the film takes place in a bar on the opening night of Oklahoma, and it pretty much follows Lorenz as he talks to everyone in this bar, specifically the bartender played by Bobby Cannavale. And he just like laments his career and talks about his life. And it's both very pathetic and sad, but also incredibly heartbreaking and just like rough, rough to watch, I guess. It's the way I could describe it. I really, really enjoyed it. I think it's one of Ethan Hawke's best performances. I don't think it's my favorite of his, but it's one of his best performances for sure. I do see why he's nominated for an Oscar, because he completely disappears into Lorenz Hart, and completely disappears. I've never seen Ethan Hawke look this pathetic and this tragic before. And he absolutely steals this movie. I forgot Margaret Qualley's in this film as well. She plays a friend of his. It's not Amelia. That's the girl from she plays in The Nice Guys. Elizabeth. That's her name. Elizabeth. So she's in it as well. You've got a good supporting cast. You've got Andrew Scott, like I said. He's really good in the film as well. There's a great two-handed conversation they have towards the end of the film when he's asking Lorenz to help him out on a revival, I believe, of one of their productions. But then Lorenz just wants to write something completely original and completely subversive from what they have written before. You know, when those performances come around, it's quite special. And I can see why he was nominated for the Academy Award here. Unfortunately, he's not going to win, but I still loved his performance either way, and I think you will too if you do check out Blue Moon. Is that on digital? I think that's on digital right now. It just came out a few weeks ago, I believe. But it was playing in cinemas, which was cool. So yeah, Blue Moon, that's another one that I did watch. And I believe in terms of shows, not really that much. Like I said, a lot of Twin Peaks. I'm still watching The Pit. I'm about an episode behind though. Loving season two. It's just The Pit. It's more of The Pit. So there's not really much more I can say around that. It's just more of this a fucking amazing show with these great actors and amazing just, you know, stuff happening on screen. engaging stuff that's happening on screen. I do like the plot at the moment between the new resident and Dr. Robbie. I want to see where that goes because I don't know if they're building like a romance between them as well, but there's also like a bit of tension, but we all know that tension could lead to, you know, romantic implications. I'm keen to see where that goes, but I'm really, really enjoying The Pit, loving it. I'm still watching Jujutsu Kaisen. It's phenomenal. Mappa's on drugs. Mappa's just otherworldly. I don't know. What are they feeding them under those desks? And that's about it, I believe. It really was just a Twin Peaks show for those last 2 weeks. But before I go, I do have something to announce. If you were paying attention to any of my socials, I've been getting back into live streaming on Twitch. We had a really, really fun live stream last week where I played the first Resident Evil game to celebrate the release of Resident Evil Requiem. We played the first ever, well, really, it's the remake of the GameCube port, but first ever Resident Evil. And we had a lot of fun with that. I am very bad at it. Very bad. Completely stuck. But we had a lot of fun. I had so much fun. I hope you guys had fun as well if you watched the stream. And I announced on that stream that is what I am going to do. I'm going to play through all of the Resident Evil games on Twitch all the way through to Requiem. It is all the mainline games. I'm not going to be playing the spin-offs. I might give some time to Code Veronica if I can get that working. But really is going to be focused on the mainline games as well as Revelations 1 and Revelations 2. So that's what I'm going to be doing, playing through all the Resident Evil games on Twitch, all of them together, the DLCs as well, not like Mercenaries mode and stuff like that, but stuff like Separate Ways and the DLCs for like 7 and 8, and I believe 2 or 3 maybe. I think it's 2. And then, like I said, Separate Ways as well. So really excited to do that. But I'm announcing here on the podcast because as well as playing the games, I'm going to be watching the movies as well. And from the next podcast onwards, we will be talking about a Resident Evil movie. And we're going to start, of course, with that classic first one. And then I don't know if I'm looking forward to watching the rest of them, but I'm going to have to do it. I won't be watching the Netflix show. I will watch Operation Raccoon City, I think it's called, or Welcome to Raccoon City, I think it's called, from like a few years ago. And I believe there's an animated one. Well, there's probably a few animated ones, but I'll probably watch one of the animated ones as well. But I will get through those Paul W.S. Anderson's Resident Evil films. So we'll be talking about those. I'm both scared and excited to get through those movies and talk about those with you guys. So like I said, next podcast will be a Resident Evil film, as well as like anything I want to talk about as well. But the main focus will be a Resident Evil movie. And if you want to check me out on Twitch, it is twitch.tv/KyleCruz, where I'll be playing through every single Resident Evil game mainline release. In parentheses. And yeah, that's about it. Thank you so much for listening. Go watch Nirvana Band, the show, the movie. Go watch Twin Peaks. And I will talk to you next time. Take care.